Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. On Tuesday, September the 8th, thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, we're going to hear from a Tunbridge couple who've spoken out about their daughter's battle with body dysmorphic order. But first on today's episode, the leader of Kent County Council has told us pausing local government reorganisation is incredibly frustrating and unsettling. A shock announcement from government yesterday revealed it was putting the whole process on hold following new legal advice. Now, this comes just weeks after we'd been told Kent's 14 local authorities would be replaced with four bigger unitary ones. Well, we've got plenty of reaction to this today. So let's hear first from Lyndon Kemp-Caron, who's the Reform UK leader of KCC.
It came completely out of the blue, didn't it? Back in July, we got the announcement, the 16th of July, we got the announcement that LGR was going ahead. And of course, they decided in their wisdom that option 4B was the one that was going to be imposed on Kent. So, you know, I've been very vocal in my objection to LGR right from day one. Listeners will be in no doubt that I thought it was a terrible idea. Option 4B, not good for Kent at all. You know, I've always said it's going to cost us hundreds of millions of pounds and would not necessarily result in better services for residents. So I thought it was absolutely shambolic. However, you know, because we've operated very openly and transparently and done everything by the book in Kent County Council, we got on with the next stage, which was preparing for the disaggregation of the big services and all the rest of the work that's gone into preparing for this. And imagine my surprise when I get a message today saying that Angela Rayner has had a change of heart again and is going to press the pause button on Kent. Not take us off the table like Essex, Suffolk and Hampshire, but just press the pause button. I mean, it's the worst of both worlds, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, how long will that pause button be paused for? I guess that's the big question now, isn't it? Because an awful lot of people, particularly within local councils, must have been worried about their jobs, for example. And this does this leave them in even more uncertainty?
It does. It leaves us completely in limbo in KCC. And as you say, it is the staff that I have the utmost sympathy for. For 2 years, they've been under the impression that, you know, at some point their jobs will go. Or if not go, then change dramatically. And then in July, we had the announcement, option 4B, everyone starts preparing. We've got 9,000 people that work across Kent, and they're out there every day delivering services to some of our most elderly and vulnerable residents. Can you imagine the effect this is having on their morale? I mean, many of them have started job hunting already, naturally. They have to, because they can't hang around and wait for this, you know, this shambolic government to make its mind up. And yet now we've got yet more delay, more uncertainty. I mean, it really is. It is shockingly bad governance.
And presumably, this has cost a fair bit of money already to get to this stage.
Yes, it absolutely has. Now, I'm going to tot up exactly how much we think it has cost us in terms of officer time, in terms of, you know, the working day of my chief executive. We've devoted hours and hours and hours and hours to preparing for LGR. I think it's probably a ballpark figure, around £1 million of taxpayers' money that has been wasted preparing for an option that is now potentially not on the table at all. I mean, it's an absolute disgrace.
Vince Maple is the leader of Medway Council. He's posted a video on socials with a message to residents.
We of course wait to see what government says to us. It is disappointing because people have been working incredibly hard on this. And I want to thank both officers here in Medway and across the 14 councils of Kent and Medway who have been working so diligently to get to this point. We'll of course be ready to work with government as we move forward with whatever their rapid review comes forward with. Two things important to remember in conclusion. Firstly, the issue of elections. In May 2027, we were due at local government elections. Those will still happen. They were going to be for North Kent. They will now revert back to being for Medway Council. You'll hear a lot more about that as we move towards May 2027. And the other critical thing I would say is that although local government reorganisation and devolution are important matters, what matters most is the day-to-day service delivery that we're giving to residents across Medway. So if you have any questions or queries on local government reorganisation, you can drop us an email. All the details are in the caption. But I want to thank officers for what they've done. Thank you for your interest in local government reorganisation here in Medway. And we'll keep you updated as the conversation with government continues.
And I've also been speaking to Stuart Jeffrey, who's the leader of Maidstone Borough Council.
So it seems that Angela Rayner has got cold feet, that she has decided that she needs more legal advice and has caused a halt on things. Despite the incredibly tight timescale that there was to get all this completed before the end of the parliamentary term. So it looks like it could be paused for quite a while.
And Stuart, an awful lot of work has already gone into it and presumably a heck of a lot of money already spent as well. Do we think this could be a complete waste of time?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, not only has a lot of work gone into it and money spent, but also staff expectations, fears and so forth. It's been 2 years in the making so far. So there's a lot of lot of issues for local government to cope with now. That money may well be wasted. I think for me, though, if they are really going to pause this, and it sounds like they are, this gives us an opportunity to have a rethink on the best way of getting power down to local people and to the decisions and money down to local people. I'm not convinced local government reorganisation was the right thing to do. It was all that was on offer. And it did, in theory, bring devolution, the power and the money. But we could potentially now have a better model going forward.
Yeah, I mean, the Prime Minister has made no secret of the fact that he's still very much in favour of devolution. That's kind of what his whole mandate is about. So do you think this pause could be temporary and then we still go ahead with it? Or, as you suggest, is it time for a bit of a rethink and go again almost?
Well, we simply don't know how long the pause is going to be. But my guess is if she's making an announcement now, we are probably talking a year or so delay, which does push the whole thing back into ridiculous timescale and too close to the next general election. So I suspect we're in for quite a long pause. And I hope that gives us the opportunity to have at local government level to have a rethink about what's the best option for us. And is there a better model for local government? I think there are potentially better models out there.
What do you think voters are going to think about this? I mean, it's a phrase I don't like, but optics. I mean, the optics aren't great, are they? If we've been working on this for 2 years and then suddenly say, oh, hang on, we've had a change of heart.
Yeah, I mean, Burnham's fallen at the first hurdle. This was his big speech that he gave when he took power. He's bringing devolution to us. And now suddenly Parliament's been back a few days and all of a sudden everything's on hold. I mean, this is really quite incompetent, isn't it?
Now, MPs have also been reacting to the news. Ashford's Sojourn Joseph has been speaking in the Commons.
My constituents in Ashford and people in Kent cannot wait any longer to see an improvement in their roads, local bus services, social care and sand provision. They were let down by decades of Tory administration and now reform. Can the Secretary of State reassure that this pause is not going to create more uncertainty and will decline in further in the public services?
And this was the response from the Secretary of State for Local Government, Angela Rayner.
Madam Deputy Speaker is absolutely right, my honourable friend, to raise the issue of what happened under the Conservatives, and that is why this Labour government took steps to ensure that we recognised what local government had been through and build the resilience back up and recognise the funding pressures. But local government reform to me is about making sure that people get the right services at the right level and that we can deliver the best for their local area. And that's what hopefully we'll be able to deliver. I still believe and I'm committed to local government reform, Madam Deputy Speaker. I just want to make sure that we get this right.
You can let us know what you think by commenting on the story. Just click on the politics pages of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
An organiser of anti-migration protests in Kent and Hampshire has defended the wearing of masks by male demonstrators. Around 200 people dressed in black and with face coverings disrupted traffic near the Port of Dover on Saturday. Protesters then clashed with police officers in Portsmouth on Sunday night, where Police and Crime Minister Sarah Jones has made a statement in the Commons.
These types of incidents require careful handling by the police, and I place on record my thanks to all those who were part of the operational responses in Dover and Portsmouth. I am especially grateful to those on the front line whose efforts were essential to bringing the demonstrations to a conclusion. I have today spoken to key policing partners. As the House would expect in the wake of such incidents, work is ongoing to establish any lessons and ensure that relevant intelligence is shared at pace across our law enforcement system. Peaceful protest is a fundamental part of our democracy, and it must be defended. But so too is the right of other citizens to go about their lives without undue interference. And there can be no excuse for threatening behaviour or serious disruption. Yeah. Yeah. Let me therefore make clear to the House and to the country that disorder of any kind will never be tolerated. And those who cross the line from peaceful protest into illegality will face the full force of the law. Yeah. This government condemns the intimidating and thuggish behaviour shown by some of the protesters this weekend. We are working closely with the police in Kent and Hampshire alongside the National Police Coordination Centre, all of whom have our full backing in taking any necessary step to uphold public safety and maintain the peace.
Meantime, Kent Police have admitted they were disappointed the protest in Dover caused significant traffic disruption for several hours. Assistant Chief Constable Nigel Brooks has issued a statement adding that while wearing a face covering isn't a criminal offence, it's also not necessary if you're going to peacefully express your views. A report's found improvements have been made at a Kent prison, but there's still a significant problem with drugs. Inspectors say the appointment of a permanent governor has created more stability after an urgent warning was issued for HMP Rochester in summer last year. There are still concerns about the availability of illicit substances posing a major threat to safety and security. 12% of men are also being released without accommodation. A new report out today claims an airport in Kent could become a national hub for drones, aerospace testing and advanced logistics, bringing £75 million a year to the local economy. MP Tony Vaughan is now urging the government to fast-track airspace changes needed at LID to make it happen. The document says it would also support more than 1,000 jobs. People living in homes near Maidstone say they're being forced to wash their children in sinks and flush toilets with bottled water because of ongoing supply disruption. 13 properties at the Abbots in Forge Lane off Lower Street in Leeds have been experiencing issues on and off for more than 2 years. South East Water have apologised and say they're working to improve the reliability of the network.
Kent Online reports.
Now, this is one of our most read stories on the website today. The parents of a woman from Tunbridge who suffers from a condition that affects how she feels about her appearance have spoken out in a bid to raise awareness. Emily Pounsford is thought to have started to develop what's known as body dysmorphic disorder when she was just 14 years old. Her parents, Mike and Holly Pounsford, have described the impact it's had on all of their lives.
I mean, we all worry a bit about what we look like, but with BD, it's much more than just a worry. It's a really emotional distress. It's normally about a perceived flaw that other people wouldn't recognise. So an imagination that my nose is huge and ugly, or there's something wrong with my lips or my hair or whatever, which you or I wouldn't notice, other people wouldn't see it at all, causes a lot of distress. It takes up a huge amount of time. You know, the cutoff generally people say is about an hour. You know, people might worry about what they look like for an hour a day, but if you have BDD, you might be worrying about it for 8 hours a day. People won't be able to leave their room because they're so concerned about what they look like. And it preoccupies them for all that time, so they can't live a normal life. You know, they can't get to school, they can't go to work. They won't be able to function normally. They'll disrupt the family. Family holidays will be messed up by it. It can lead to, it's dangerous as well. You know, it means that you there could be consequences of what you have, and you'll worry about what you look like. That would be really serious for them.
Yeah, Emily used to get very nervous about, but it started with her really, with I think her nose. And then it sort of moved to her eyes and other parts of her body. Now she would, for instance, never wear nothing over her arms because she feels her arms are disgusting. And to start with, she would be actually frightened of even things like aeroplanes going over. She'd tend to sort of want to hide because she'd be frightened that it might make people feel sick to look at her. And sometimes she'd actually think that people in the street were being sick because they could see her. And it was a lot of covering up, wasn't it, to start with? So covering up in the car, we had to put blankets around the car windows. And we gradually tried to sort of decrease all that. But she would have a very heavy makeup, which was quite bizarre. And then she'd started wearing a lot of hair extensions, which actually sort of started giving her a bit of alopecia. And then she would start wearing wigs. So she had a number of wigs. And you sort of let her have them because it would get her out the house and let her sort of socialise a little bit. But then it became, gradually the coverings have come off. She will still do the kind of go-to covering her hair with a scarf, or probably always tying her hair up in a lot of bows and ribbons and things. But now she's actually learned not to wear makeup, which is a sort of amazing achievement, really, when you look back 15 years ago when she got ill.
I think that's one of the other things that you could, one of the things that you can spot BDD by is these sort of repetitive behaviours. So constantly looking in a mirror, for example, or constantly grooming your hair, brushing your hair, or worrying about what you look like. So you're covering yourself up. It's an illness. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's something that's, you know, it's really a mental health problem.
Mike is now a trustee of the BDD Foundation, which aims to help the 1 in 50 people with the condition. You can also read this story today at Kent Online. Plus, within that article, we've got a link to the foundation, which provides a screening test and other resources to help.
Kent Online reports.
Flowers have been left at the scene of a crash near Meppham, which killed two cyclists. A man in his 60s and a woman in her 50s died at the scene in Sole Street on Sunday morning, while another person was taken to hospital. Two men have been arrested on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving, while a 19-year-old woman's been held on suspicion of assisting an offender. Councillor Dakota Dibbin represents Cobham at Gravesham Borough Council. He told us residents are still in shock.
I mean, obviously, a lot of them are very, very upset. Sole Street is a very, very small community in Cobham, and they're deeply saddened by the news, the devastating news that happened, and a lot of them have shared their thoughts and nice comments online, not just to my post but to the local Facebook posts as well. It really has sort of touched a lot of people. This accident is sort of, yeah, it's made a lot of people reach out in terms of sharing their condolences to the family and friends of the loved ones that passed away.
A building in Ashford that was demolished following a fire is finally due to be redeveloped. Swanton House on Elwick Road is set to be replaced with two blocks of flats containing a total of 34 apartments. Construction has been delayed and work isn't expected to be completed for almost 2 years. Meantime, bosses in Medway have agreed not to install streetlights on a new development, following concerns it'll impact local wildlife. 44 homes are due to be built on land off Fen Street near St Mary Hoo, but people living nearby staged a protest over the lighting. The council's decided that adding it could actually make the area more unsafe by encouraging people to walk along the rural road, which doesn't have a path.
Kent Online News.
A building in Dover that forms part of a multi-million pound regeneration project in the town centre is officially opening today. The bench will include a campus for students at East Kent College, a co-working space, bakery and Screen South Media Company. It's all been paid for through levelling up cash from the government, and Councillor Lynn Wright from Dover District Council has been telling me more about it.
Dover always seems as if it's a rather forgotten one of the East Kent towns, and as if it's the last place that has an identity other than just being a port where people pass through. We want it to be somewhere where people come, they work, they invest, they enjoy their time in Dover. It's a wonderful town, and something like this just starts the regeneration of not just the seafront and the Market Square, but the whole of the town.
Give us a figure. How much has it actually cost?
Just over 21 million from central government. I think the main thing is going to bring aspiration. There's going to be young people there from East Kent College doing their work. Hopefully we would like them to see them then move into offices, set up businesses, use the space. They can link in with Screen South and creative stuff. And I think it is for young people. Surveys show that young people want something. They want to be able to be educated well, to have skills, to have things to do, places to go. And this is just part of that, is investing in our young people for the future.
What about the surrounding area in Dover? People who've seen that building go up and are perhaps thinking, oh, what's going on here? What's inside? How are they going to benefit from it, do you think?
There are local businesses that sit around the town, the Market Square. There are businesses moving into Castle Street. We've got new places opening up and places that have recently opened in the Market Square. So I think it will just bring more people. It will increase the footfall. It links up with the St James's, which is a development that was done several years ago, which has also brought lots of people in. So I'm hoping it's just going to start a buzz. And we've got the wonderful underpass that's been renovated. So we'll have people coming from the seafront, from the cruise terminals, coming and wanting to see Dover. So it's just going to lift the whole area.
Okay, a man who started a trend of hiding miniature toy ducks in cafes all over the world says he's glad it's making people smile. Coffee Shop Ducks was set up by a dad from Gravesend and is based on a family prank. The Instagram page is now followed by celebrities, including Stacey Solomon. And finally, if you follow Kent Online on socials today, you can see pictures of a stone fort in Dymchurch that's been transformed into a holiday let. Martello Tower number 25 was saved from disrepair and brought back to life following a five-year renovation project, which has cost a whopping £1 million. A stay there will cost around £750 a night.
Kent Online Sport.
Cricket, and with just three games of the season left, Kent travel to Derbyshire in the county championship. Adam Holyoake's side are currently second in the Division 2 table following a win over Worcestershire last time out. Play was due to get underway today at 10:30. And staying with cricket, congratulations to Kent Academy's Leo Selvey-Clinton, who's become the youngest player to score a century on his debut for England under-19s. The 17-year-old from Item near Sevenoaks was facing Pakistan in a four-day youth test fixture at Arundel. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.